Good afternoon. Welcome back to Deacon Day. From our class this morning, from our sermon this morning, we looked a great deal at deacons. We're going to be looking at deacons this evening as well. We won't answer every question we might have in regards to qualifications, but we certainly want to do the best that we can to cover maybe some major things and let some maybe informal conversations with the elders or with different individuals in our group kind of take care of the rest. As with anything, we need to take Jesus' advice into consideration to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. In a process like this, sometimes things can get emotional and we can have different judgments on things. And so let's make sure that we are as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. The lesson this evening is entitled Deacons, Teamwork, and Local Church Leadership. And we can look at all the different facets of church leadership and even just church membership as well. And that's probably something we'll explore a little bit more as we go through this year. As we think about all of us being citizens of the kingdom, we all need to be kind of pulling some weight in regards to this. We are thinking about deacons specifically, though, today. And as I mentioned this morning, I was really inspired in this process of elders and deacons by Max Dawson, who definitely has a niche for church leadership and cultivating church leadership. I hope over the next few years that we can grow our leadership even more. And I think that we can if we would all commit ourselves to it, if we would develop that aspiration and desire to do the best that we can. I think we have some men now that will likely be appointed as deacons, I think, in the next few years. We have some more men who could be appointed as deacons if we stay on that trajectory towards God. And so let's make sure that we're doing that and not just establishing leadership now, but also building leadership for the future. And that's something we all need to be invested in. I want to start with a question. Can elders do all the work that needs to be done in a local church by themselves? And I don't mean this in the sense of all, like, totalistically. I just mean in the sense of maybe leadership, if we want to narrow it down like that. Can elders do everything leadership-wise that is required? I don't believe so. I think they're incredible individuals, judging from the qualifications, judging from the nature of their work. They're absolutely incredible individuals, perhaps five talent men, if we want to use that idea. But they can't accomplish everything. That's just simply the case. People are limited. People have limited energy. People have limited time. People have a limited attention span, a limited focus. And so as we think about this and as we ponder this and meditate on this idea, we do need to think about that God's plan in the church involves multiple levels of leadership, multiple layers of leadership. And that it basically accounts for the fact that our capacity as humans is limited and God's work is vast. The nature of the kingdom work is absolutely vast. And so given this reality that elders can't accomplish everything leadership-wise, we essentially have three options. And the first option is that work may be left undone. And nobody wants that. We want to make sure that we're covering our bases. We want to make sure that people's souls are being tended to. We want to make sure that the roof doesn't fall in on our head. We want to make sure that this doesn't turn into a pigsty that we gather into. And so that's obviously not a very good option. And so we kind of throw that option to the side. A second option would be that work may be done, but it may be of poor quality. And this isn't really a tenable option either. Nobody wants to have issues that they're constantly worried about. Nobody wants things done half-heartedly. We want things to be done well. We want to excel. And we want people to invest themselves 100% in what they do. And that's part of this process that guides selection of elders. That's part of this process that guides the selection of deacons. We want people who are trustworthy and reliable, who will give 100%, who are committed to this work. And so that's not a tenable option either. Really, the only option left on the table is that trusted individuals, trusted servants are selected to assist, and they become a part of that formal leadership. And remember, we talked about this really for the past couple months. There is formal leadership in the church, and there's informal leadership. That's not clergy laity. That's just how the Bible describes things. That's not inherent quality differences. That's role differences. And so we do have elders and deacons in the church exercising oversight, elders oversight over souls, and deacons oversight over not trivial matters, but more physical matters, more material things. And so we do have that formal leadership. We have informal leadership. So really, this is our only option, biblically speaking. This is the scriptural option that we are thinking about. And delegation is how things are accomplished. And we talked a little bit about that this morning with regard to Moses. I have Numbers 18 on the slide. It should be Exodus 18. We read from Exodus 18 earlier. But that was Jethro giving counsel, the father-in-law of Moses. And he says, you're going to wear yourself out. And not only that, you're going to wear Israel out. Because you cannot keep this up. And so there are captains or judges or leaders, however you want to think about that. Deacons would be maybe an idea of thinking about that as well. Heads over people, heads over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. So that Moses would not wear himself out and do an ineffective job. So Moses, obviously, as incredible as he was, and as good as a leader as he was, thinking from a general standpoint, certainly he had his failures, but as good as he was, he could not do it alone. Others were called to assist him. It's not only Jethro that makes this acknowledgement, but even in the law of Moses, it's codified that a system of judges would serve, that there would be elders in the community that would play an important function in the service of God. And we see that played out when we have the 70 elders joining Aaron and his sons and that involvement of God descending upon Mount Sinai in the next few chapters. We have Moses needing help. Great leader, but he needed help. If that wasn't a good enough example, Jesus required help. Jesus' time was limited on earth. And so, on earth, in Luke chapter 10, for instance, he appoints 70 individuals and he sends them out two by two to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And he gives them a commission. He says, I need help. And so, please join me. The chief shepherd, the great deacon of the faith, needed help. And so, he employed a body of individuals to assist him. It's in Luke chapter 10 and verse 1. We also have, of course, the Great Commission, Mark 16 and verse 15, that says to go therefore into all creation and preach the gospel to every creature. And he's talking to the apostles there. And so you have those 11 that would be left, discounting Judas. And then you'd have, of course, the one who is added in Acts chapter 1, involved in that commission as well. Jesus asked for help. He commissioned a group. He gave them responsibility to do these things. And there really wasn't a plan B. That was plan A. And God's plan always finds fruition. It always makes sense. It's always wise. And if these individuals fail, then work would be left undone. We know that they did not fail because in the next 25 years, all the Roman Empire had heard the gospel. They were committed. And so this leadership team in the early church accomplished a great thing, the spread of the gospel throughout the Roman Empire. And that was all because of teamwork. That was all because people were on the same page. When I was in college one summer, I ended up working for Walmart, and we remodeled the Walmart in 10 weeks, top to bottom. We redid the floors, redid the wiring, we redid the refrigeration, we redid all the racks, we did everything in 10 weeks, top to bottom. One of the things I really liked about Walmart, and they're not certainly across the board good in this regard, but Sam Walton was very quotable, and you could see some of that in some of their literature. For instance, said this. He said, one person working alone may not accomplish much. They may, but they may not. Success, though, is the result of people pulling together to reach one common goal. Teamwork. That'd be an apt appropriation for a teamwork. And so he kind of made that statement. Very good statement. And any study of the scripture would tell us that this is the case. If we want this congregation to be successful, we need to pull together. And that requires development. Development now, development in the next few years. And so goals are certainly something that we're striving for. Short-term goals, long-term goals, really long-term goals. We have to think about this. We have to lay it out and consider this. Think about the last few years. I think we've really been going in a great trajectory, haven't we? We've seen growth. We've seen people come out of institutionalism. We've seen, we call it sometimes swelling, people moving from different congregations. We've seen that. We've seen conversions. We've seen the development of potential in the past few years. And so we really should keep that going. That's momentum. Let's keep it going for the next few years. And let's keep it going as long as we're around. We need to pull together. We need to function as a team. One of the crucial elements in our team would be deacons. And so that's why we're focused on this. That's why we are developing. But we have to think about the deacon's role in the team. And that's kind of what we're gearing at tonight. That because of deacons, we would be stronger together. Now, I think there's very little doubt that this congregation is strong at this point. Certainly there are maybe some things, some different judgments or things of that nature. But there's not a whole lot as far as people going hands to throat over, especially recently. This has been very united, especially in a process as touchy sometimes as the appointment of elders and deacons can be. And so let's make sure that we're keeping that certainly true as we think about this process. We need to be pulling together, and we need to be thinking about deacons in wisdom and making a very wise choice in this regard. Of course, the term deacon, we've talked about this for the past 2 weeks. Deacon just means servant. Deacon just means servant. Of course, all Christians are expected to be servants. Jesus tells us, if you desire to be first, then you must be last. If you desire to lead, you must be a servant. And so there is that expectation of all Christians, but there is also the special expectation of those in the specific sense who are appointed as deacons. The Bible does talk about deacons as being, we might call, special servants. They're appointed servants. And so they have a higher accountability. They have a higher responsibility, and they have qualifications that in general are expected for the most part of all Christians, but then there are some specific ones that maybe aren't. It's not required, for instance, for a Christian or for a servant of the church to be married, but that is a requirement for deacons. And so it is a special class of individuals. And so when we think about a special servant, sometimes people get this wrong idea of maybe an elevation of a clergy-laity distinction, but the Bible does not teach that. The Bible teaches that deacons are foot washers. There's not an elevation. There's not certain clothing that sets them apart. Of course, they're expected to present themselves in a good fashion, whether that be in any manner of their life. They should be presenting themselves in good fashion, but they are not looking for glory. They're not looking for elevation over other people. They are to be the embodiment of passages like Philippians 2:3, esteeming others as more important than themselves. That's the role of a deacon. And so while deacons are crucial to the proper functioning and the fulfillment of potential in God's church, they are not elevated in value over anybody else. They're worthy of respect because they meet these qualifications, but they are not elevated in value over anybody else. He serves. And so when we're thinking about deacons, we're thinking about people who are foot washers. They're not seeking glory. Because what do you think is going to happen if you put somebody who seeks glory into this office of the church? It's not going to benefit the church at all. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Deacons oftentimes are connected to material matters in the church. But we should not discount the connection sometimes between material matters and material issues in the church and spiritual issues in the church. A perfect illustration of that we looked at this morning, Acts chapter 6. There was a neglect of the Grecian widows in regards to food. That was a material matter. Did that have spiritual repercussions? Absolutely. If that problem wasn't fixed right away, and that would have damaged the church, if not destroyed the church, before it really got its legs under it. And so there is a spiritual, powerful spiritual dimension to the work of deacons. Again, deacons have a lot to do with the facility, audiovisual things, yard maintenance. They contribute something far greater than just taking care of physical things. Those things are necessary and they need to be taken care of, and they should be thanked for taking care of those things. But we should also, again, not miss that connection between those types of things and spiritual matters. You remember a first century deacon, of course, didn't have audiovisual systems, at least not in a formal sense. And so a lot of what we see nowadays that deacons are taking care of maybe wasn't necessarily around in the first century. There's a lot that can be taken care of. I know I've been talking with Fred and Steve, and they've been kind of developing this list of roles of things that can be done once, Lord willing, we're able to appoint deacons. And they're both kind of coming to me, and we're having conversations, we're sending notes back and forth. And everybody's been kind of coming to the basic conclusion that there's a lot that needs to be done. And a lot of this falls on the deacon's shoulders. These people have to be willing to measure up. They have to be willing to be a necessary part of this team. Again, from the example, from the pattern in Acts chapter 6 that we see, deacons play a crucial role in the preservation of harmony in the church. You remember one of the descriptions of the Good Shepherd in Psalm 23 is that he leads the sheep beside still waters. I really like that idea because that's what shepherds do. They try and keep the waters as still as possible because the church is filled with who? People. And people don't always keep the water still. And so shepherds play a crucial role in that. But from passages like Acts chapter 6, we also see that one of the instruments wielded towards that purpose are deacons. Deacons play a crucial role in keeping those waters still. There are, sadly, many examples of people who are falling away over disagreements about trash, about cleaning bathrooms, about what books were picked up and who didn't get the chance to pick those things up. Squabbles over material things. There is a very important spiritual dimension in the work of a deacon. Deacons promote the growth of the kingdom. And you remember that from Acts chapter 6 earlier when that problem was dealt with through those appointed servants. Acts chapter 6 and verse 7 tells us that effective evangelism continued. The word increased mightily and the church increased mightily because these people were taking these issues and solving those issues and dealing with those issues. It was far more than just feeding widows in that passage. Let's use a test case in the scriptures. There's really not a whole lot that we have in regards to formal deacons. There's only one listing of qualifications specifically. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verses 8 through 13, there's a brief mention of at least a paradigm in regards to deacons in Acts chapter 6, about 7 verses. So between those two passages, we've got about 13 verses in the New Testament about deacons. Not a whole lot. However, there are a sprinkling of references in the New Testament that do use the term diakonia, which is translated deacon. It's just a transliteration that we have from Greek. There are several passages that use that term and that may or may not be referring to those in the office of deacons. I want to use this example with you. At the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 15, there is a family that is called out for their service, their diakonia, on behalf of Corinth. Go ahead and turn to 1 Corinthians 16 with me as we think about Stephanus. Stephanus. 1 Corinthians 16, starting in verse 15. Now I urge you, brethren, you know the household of Stephanus, that they were the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have devoted themselves for ministry to the saints, that you also be in subjection to such men and to everyone who helps in the work of the labors. I rejoice over the coming of Stephanus and Fortunatus and Achaicus, because they have supplied what was lacking on your part, for they have refreshed my spirit and yours. Therefore, acknowledge such men. I'm going to use Stephanus as the head of this household as kind of a paradigm, as an illustration of this. Stephanus was somebody who was committed to the labor that was going on there. If we were reading from the King James Version, it actually uses the term addicted. I really prefer that translation. As a whole, I love the New American Standard, but I really love the King James Version of that. Because the New American Standard says they had devoted themselves. And that's a rich term. I'll give you that. But addicted, that's a stronger term, isn't it? They had addicted themselves to this. They could not live without serving God's people. They could not go through their day without serving God's people. A lot of people say, I can't even begin to wake up. I can't begin to even work without a cup of coffee. They want to be devoted to the work. They were devoted to the work. It was the first thing on their mind. It was the last thing on their mind before they went to sleep. They were committed. They were servants of the church. Now, Stephanus, he may have been a deacon, he may not have been, but certainly the terminology and the example serve very well for us. Again, whether he's a deacon or not, he certainly is a model servant. He certainly is somebody who had a servant mentality, and certainly deacons or those maybe who are aspiring to be deacons can learn from him. And we can all benefit from this example as we examine it. And you want to note, again, that he's addicted to service, that his family is addicted to service. The term ministry or service here is from diakonia for servants. And also note this. His household was on board. His household was on board. It's not really something we've dealt with a whole lot in this regard. But this may provide some commentary on 1 Timothy chapter 3. Namely, verse 11. 1 Timothy 3 says, wives must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. And then notice verse 12. Deacons must be husbands of only one wife and good managers of their children and their own households. What does this look like? I think in many ways it looks like the household of Stephanus. The house was in order. They were committed to the work. Everybody was invested in this process. So when we're thinking about deacons, do they have a family situation that reflects that? Or are they constantly going to be dealing with struggles in the household and be taken away from the work? Something to be considered. A deacon should have a supportive family. Otherwise, he will not serve effectively. They at least have to have a supporting role in his work. And that requires time. That requires dedication. That requires sacrifice. Also, in many of the tasks and areas of responsibility that deacons have, their wives are critically important to their success. Now, note further about Stephanus, where he was serving. We're reading in 1 Corinthians 16. The past 15 and a half chapters have been fraught with issues at this congregation. Seems like every chapter there's a major issue. He's serving in a hostile environment. His family is serving in a very difficult congregation. Nevertheless, given all the messes in the church, he is serving. He is not self-centered. He was committed. He was addicted to serving not just anybody, but the Corinthian brethren. One last point about Stephanus. It's said in this passage, for one, submit to such men. They're examples. They're worthy of respect. These guys are grave, they're serious, they take it seriously. They are worthy of imitation. But it also says that his work refreshed the brethren. The brethren at Corinth, and Paul, an apostle of Christ, was refreshed by the example of Stephanus. What a blessing it would be to have men like Stephanus and families like Stephanus's involved in the office of the deacon. Again, whether or not Stephanus was a deacon is kind of irrelevant. It would serve as a tremendous example for us, as those who would aspire to be deacons. And because of examples like him and deacons that would serve in the capacity of Stephanus, we can understand why 1 Timothy 3 and verse 13 tells us that they obtain a high, respectable standing in the faith. They're worthy of imitation. We talked about this morning, but I wanted to reiterate a few points in this regard. The scriptural pattern, you know, thinking about Acts chapter 6. Again, some people consider these to be deacons. At the very least, they are a paradigm. There are parallels between them. One of the things that stated in Acts chapter 6 and verse 3, they were going to be appointed to be over this business. And that is somewhat hostile towards the viewpoint that a lot have developed in regards to deacons. They were to be over that business, and that would free others, namely the apostles, and from our application, elders, that would free others to take care of other matters. They were trusted. And so again, what we're looking for are people who are trustworthy. People who can be trusted with something that would have been very difficult to oversee. Now, I want you to think about this. I mentioned earlier, at this point in the church, we're dealing with thousands of people, right? We're dealing with thousands of people. Let's say at this point, given men and women, we're dealing with 7,000 people. 7,000 people. Given the nature of the medical world, and given the nature of the fact that men died before women oftentimes, the percentage we might throw out there might be that 10% of the church were widows. Now let's cut that in half and say that 5% of them did not have family to take care of them. So 5% of 7,000 people, 350 people. 350 widows. How many deacons do we have again? Seven. Now we're just kind of crunching some numbers, right? So one to every, how many? 50 widows. 350 women. 350 widows. A stipend I used to get during cross country was $7 a meal. So $21 a day for meals. 350 widows. $21 a day. 7,000? Is that right? 7,000? I'm kind of losing the numbers here. $7,000 a day to feed these women. A week, $50,000. And who was to oversee it? The deacons. Kind of changes our paradigm, doesn't it? Kind of changes our model. Just something to think about. I mentioned earlier about how this rubric for deacons has kind of changed. It's kind of evolved over time. I think one of the main catalysts for that, I think Don Truex really points it out, one of the main catalysts for that change is World War II. World War II. So many people were drafted into the war. So many people got used to this top-down leadership that completely changed and revolutionized what the model of deacons was. And we're seeing the repercussions of that. We're distanced by, 70 years. But we're still seeing repercussions from that. We're only a generation and a half out of that. Top-down leadership. People got used to receiving reports and orders from generals, and they would not act unless the general had spoken. They wouldn't go buy a broom unless the elder told them what broom to buy. It became very fearful, and it changed things. Sometimes deacons are not allowed to be over anything. Very little is delegated, and it does not help the local church. In that model, shepherding is really but a small part of serving as an elder. The focus of elders in that model is to make decisions and to handle administration of things relative to the church. But the New Testament helps clarify that that model is too narrow. It's too restrictive. The New Testament makes very clear that deacons can be over some things. And that's, again, who we're looking for. Trustworthy people. people that would work with Fred and Steve to alleviate that burden. People that could be trusted with those kinds of things. It's a very respectful office. It's a very crucial office. It's a very serious contemplation that we are taking into consideration. Of course, there's really three challenges to that. Three challenges to that type of delegation if we were to get back on that biblical model. Three hang-ups that we might see. Well, elders, not necessarily Fred and Steve, I'm just thinking in general terms, elders maybe have to give up some micromanaging. They have to be okay letting deacons make decisions. Because again, the whole point is to alleviate the burden of the elders. It's a lot easier to watch over deacons in their work than it is to watch over souls, isn't it? It's a lot easier to be critical, whether it be positively or negatively, of a paint job or the trimming of bushes than it is to watch over souls. Again, I think that's one of the problems that we've fallen into. I'll give you an illustration, kind of thinking about paint. An elder watches and inspects a deacon's work as he paints a wall. No doubt he would get at least some measure of satisfaction. The wall would be painted in the classroom. That would be a good thing. He would be involved in that. He'd get some measure of satisfaction, but consider the opposite of that, or consider kind of another side of that. An elder works with somebody in the congregation for months and months and months, trying to improve their attendance, trying to improve their attentiveness while they're actually here, trying to improve maybe their management over their household, trying to develop them spiritually. They might not see any growth for months of work. Which was easier, to watch the deacon paint the wall or to try and watch over that soul? No doubt painting the wall, but that's not the work of an elder. Again, elders can paint walls. That's not the point. The point is, where's the focus? Is it a biblical focus? Or has that biblical model been blurred by culture? Another challenge to this, there has to be some ability to develop the delegation of authority. And there has to be an okayness with that. Elders, because of how they would qualify, over 20 qualifications, that sometimes can go to somebody's head. Let's be honest. Leadership, management, sometimes can get to somebody's head. Again, not necessarily towards Steve and Fred. I think they're doing an excellent job. Just thinking about that and the temptation towards that. I'm an authority, so you have to do what I say. If you want a job done right, you got to do it yourself. You can't trust that to a deacon. It'll be quicker and easier if I do it. That's a big challenge to a lot of elderships. Some elders can be reluctant to relinquish some of that control. And they end up doing things and focusing their attention hours and hours at a time on things other than overseeing the flock. They have to give up micromanaging. That's going to be very hard. From the deacon's perspective, the deacons might be reluctant to accept responsibility. They might say, well, I can't make any decisions on my own. I have to go to the elders. Now, wisdom would dictate in certain situations to go to the elders. You know, if you're going to repave the parking lot, $20,000+, maybe ask the elders, is this a wise investment? But if they're so afraid of making decisions on their own that they won't even go out and buy a broom, then the model of the Bible has completely gone to nothing. And we're not seeing it for what it should be. They have to accept responsibility, and that's okay. So again, what are we looking for? We're looking for people who are responsible. We're looking for people who can deal with that responsibility. And because of the nature of the work here, this is a smaller congregation, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And so that dictates how we look at those who are qualified and how many deacons we might need. We got a lot going on. And so if we have a bunch of guys that are qualified, we need to put all of the resources that we have to work. And make sure that each one has a specific job. Each one is fulfilling a specific need. And we are being effective. Teamwork's the goal. Teamwork always is the goal in regards to the church. In Matthew 25 and verse 23, Jesus commended those who served him well, and he gave them a pat on the back because of what they did. So when we think about deacons, and as we're considering the appointment of deacons, and as Fred and Steve are kind of governing this process, spearheading this process, let's make this as easy as possible. Let's make this as painless as possible, because the whole point of this process is for us to act together as a team, to be united, to be in harmony, and to support one another. And namely, as we think about deacons, we're thinking about supporting Steve and Fred and the work that they have been charged with. And as we support them, they are able to support us. It's a circular kind of an environment. So let's make sure that we are communicating effectively. Let's make sure that we're not binding our own personal judgments on others, that we're talking through things, that we're asking those we might feel are qualified maybe some questions for clarification. Let's be meeting with the elders if we have questions, maybe in regards to qualifications or to work or to what needs to be done to alleviate their burden. After all, we're appointing deacons to alleviate their burden. We have to know what the burden is so we can put names forward. This is a crucial process right now that we are involved in. And so much could go wrong with this process. But so much can go right with this process as well. And so let's make sure that this process is being effective. Let's make sure that we are working together. Let's make sure that we appoint some men who alleviate the burden from Fred and Steve. I mentioned this earlier in this evening that Jesus is referred to as a deacon in the New Testament. Twice. He came to serve, not to be served. And every single one of us is called to service. Or to use a biblical word, we're called to ministry. We're called to minister in the kingdom of God. So all of our choices need to be governed by that fact. The fact that we are called to service. The fact that we are called to make sacrifices. Jesus calls us, he tells us to count the cost. You might have to give up a position of preeminence. You might have to give up all manner of worldly things in order to serve God effectively. If that's something that you're willing to take on this evening, then we would encourage you to do it. It can be a difficult decision as we count the cost, but it is the best decision that you could possibly make. And perhaps you've been tangled by things in the world. Perhaps you have served a different master. No man can serve two masters. Perhaps we need to redirect our commitment, redirect our patriotism to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so if we can help you in either one of those situations, or if we can pray with you, we'd love to assist. If you would present your need, us together, we stand and sing.